I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the state of community leadership in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Leadership Indianapolis has done a study of the changing nature of leadership, volunteerism, and citizenship here in the Circle City. We will talk about the study's findings and how those findings were gathered. My guests are Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker of Walker, which provided the data for the study. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the statehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about an important new study of the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. That was pulled together by Leadership Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker, whose firm Walker provided the qualitative and quantitative data for the study. I'm not sure, is there any other kind of data besides qualitative and quantitative? I think those are the two options. Anyhow, welcome to both of you. It's good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John.
So let's talk a little bit about what the genesis, really, of this study was. Why, and I think I'll start with Linda on this, why you thought it was needed, and, you know, sort of what questions, broad questions, were you hoping to get answers to?
We really wanted to, as we planned our growth and development at Leadership Indianapolis, we were asking ourselves questions that we didn't have the answers to in our community. And we did that because we knew we wanted to grow and really have a significant impact on the community of Indianapolis in developing and mobilizing community leaders. So as we planned those strategic initiatives, we said, you know, we really need to take these questions to the community and we need to ask Indianapolis what it thinks. And we knew that we wanted to gather information that was about what are the gaps? What are the needs in community leadership? Are the pathways to community leadership the same as perhaps they have been? Indianapolis has this tremendous legacy of executive civic leaders. Do we get them the same way that we used to? Are there new things about our community that perhaps we need to know better or more fully understand so that we can be more effective in developing and mobilizing those community leaders?
And why it probably ought to take a step back here and ask you to talk a little bit about what Leadership Indianapolis is and why this would be so important to you. That question would be so important.
Sure. So we're in the business of building the civic leadership bench. Civic leadership is, especially in a city like Indianapolis, the fuel behind so many advancements that our city has seen in recent decades and throughout our history. What we know we want to do is be far more strategic and intentional in building up those leaders, identifying them, bringing more people into the fold of civic leadership, because it is a critical element of our city's ability to thrive and be sustainable into the 21st century. And that's what we do. We have programs that develop civic leaders. One of our programs is the very popular Stanley K. Lacey Executive Leadership Series. We have a program called Opportunity Indianapolis, which I call your sampler platter for getting introduced to the community. We have a skills-based program, and we're planning more. And our work is to say to the community, we are continually developing that pipeline of civic leaders and helping them go find ways to get engaged.
Was there a particular concern that spurred you to do the study at this time?
No, and that's an excellent question. This does not come from an intuition of maybe we're falling back. No, this was really all about gathering information so we could be more strategic in our future plans.
Well, and maybe this is a point to pull Steve into the conversation, mm-hmm. too. But the Indianapolis is not unique in this. There have been a lot of fears about sort of levels of civic engagement and how the models have changed with this generation. The cliche I often hear in this city is that we've never really had anyone to step up and be the next Tom Binford, for example, for those of us who have some history mm-hmm. in the city. Mm-hmm. Steve, you're nodding your head. You've heard that before, too. Yes. So
Jim Morris might be the
Jim
next
Morris. Well, yeah,
Tom Binford.
Jim Morris, but without I think giving away any trade secrets about Jim Morris, but he's no longer quite as young as springtime either. So yeah. that bench is not as deep as it might have been at one point. So you decided you wanted to try to figure out where these, if I can oversimplify, where these new wellsprings of leadership were, of civic leadership were going to be, and whether, in terms of both identifying them and then providing the proper support to get them to where they need to be, you needed to change some of your models. Is that a fair assessment of what this was really about?
We anticipated that we might need to do that. We did not have any indication that there was anything that we needed to fix. This was about how do we grow what we already have.
So those are tough questions to to establish hard answers to. Steve, how did you go about doing that?
Well, this is sort of the intellectual challenge that our businesses face all the time. We're in the business of helping people measure things that many people don't think are measurable, and then also trying to create strategies and tactics that can actually improve the situation once you can get something measured. The old saying, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of the findings we found, is that this whole concept of civic engagement and community leadership is a little bit ill-defined. It's sort of hard to define. So I think that's one of the really...
Sort of like pornography. You know it when you see it.
You know it when you see it, but yeah, but how do you do it? And how? Yeah. And to Linda's point, how do you be intentional about building upon it? So I think that's one of the neat outcomes of starting to release these results and having the community engage about this is I think we will have a better defined definition of what community leadership is, what civic engagement is. From the study, we did find that it's basically a good strategy for a community. Those people that exhibit the kinds of community engagement at the higher level tend to be more committed. They will be more involved in the organizations they care about. They'll give more money. They'll give more time and all the things that you would want from your citizenry.
And if you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. The springboard for the conversation is a new study that will be released by Leadership Indianapolis in just a few hours. We're actually getting an advance peek here on No Limits, I guess. From what I understand, we rate just right after the mayor, right? You came from the mayor's office here.
Well, yes.
Yes? Okay. Okay, well, it's okay.
Sorry, John.
He is the mayor.
I get that.
I understand my role in the universe, and it's not to be the mayor.
But he only had 3 or 4 people with him.
And I'm here by myself. Yeah. I'm here with actually a tremendous supporting crew to put the show on the air. So, and you say that the challenge, the intellectual challenge in your business is figuring out a way to measure these things. In this case, how did you go about measuring them? What were the things you were looking for that would give you meaningful data to study and analyze?
Well, that's where we started with the qualitative, John. We actually had, about this time last summer, we had in-depth discussions with 23, arguably, of the best leaders in the community. I won't name any names so I don't leave anybody out, but if you think of anybody who's important in this community, we probably talked to them. And from that qualitative, we got a great sort of framework from which we could start to operate. And some of our hypotheses were, Indianapolis does have something unique in terms of what we do in our community. There is this sort of this secret sauce that we have that allows us to get important things done. There's lots of evidence around that in the city, the Super Bowls, the Final Fours, the beautiful airport, the downtown revitalization, the events that almost nobody can pull off except Indy. And then we also wanted to go out and compare ourselves to a couple of cities, and we spent a lot of time discussing that, but we ended up settling on Louisville, which is a very comparable city, just 90 or 120 minutes down I-65 from us, about the same size. And then we picked the city of Austin as sort of an aspirant city. Mm-hmm. You know, 40 years ago, nobody really knew what Austin, where Austin was, and today it is a destination for young and talented people to go to. So we were able to do a comparison of Indianapolis to Austin and to Louisville using a projectable sample of each of those three communities. And then we created a fourth segment to the research, which was people that identify themselves as leaders. Now, it was by definition, it was a convenient sample. It was people that are alumni of Linda's programs or people that have gone through other sorts of leadership programs or people that are actively engaged in sort of well-known volunteer activities around town. And really what we found is that Indianapolis is somewhat different than the comparison cities, but the real opportunity is that this group of leaders that we identified exhibit incredible behaviors relative to the general population in terms of the way they support our community.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Leadership Indianapolis's new study on the state of community leadership here. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So you started with a qualitative, and you looked at these two other cities, one of them because it offered some close both geographic and demographic points of reference with Indianapolis, and Austin because it's sort of an aspirant city. What were the common elements you found with those three cities? And then the second part of this is going to be, you know, where did we break off? Were we ahead in some areas? Were we behind in others? And we'll drill down on that. But let's start with what were the commonalities, common challenges?
One thing I should have mentioned is that we also picked Austin and Louisville because they have vibrant leadership development programs, not unlike what we have here in Indianapolis. So
right.
Linda was familiar with their kind of their leadership groups. I would say that one of the findings is that we don't have something totally unique here. I like to say other people love their communities too. So people in Austin and people in Louisville, in general, sort of described about the same level of engagement. What was sort of interesting is on the demographic splits and also some of the attitudinal things. Austin people really do think their city is cool and unique. And they are much more vocal about promoting it than we are in Indianapolis. Now, some of that might be a humility thing. But I think one of the other interesting findings here is that Austin is the most diverse city of the three. You are the least likely to be a native of that city. You are probably younger if you live there than you are and if you're in Indianapolis. And your incomes are higher. And so one of the conclusions that we've drawn is that Austin really has embraced diversity and inclusion perhaps better than other cities have. And so that was kind of an interesting finding. And I think it's particularly important when you think about the next generation, millennials, and also sort of just the whole changing demographics of not only our city, but of the whole country.
And I've got to ask, I'm taking us a little off pattern, but since we talked about Austin embracing diversity, we just had Republican candidate for mayor Chuck Brewer on the show on Tuesday, and we've talked to a couple of former mayors who were talking about the damage, actually, the whole RFRA debate did to the city's perception as being open and welcoming. Did this study take place before or after?
It was before.
Yeah, the data collection was done.
Last summer is when Steve's team did the qualitative piece, and then it was – November of last year that we put the digital survey into the market. And so that was well before any of this with RFRA happened.
So it doesn't provide a benchmark necessarily for whether that, since that is one of the larger questions now in leadership circles in Indianapolis, is where we go beyond that. If you are just joining us, we are talking about Leadership Indianapolis's fascinating new study of community leadership. My guests are Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker, whose firm Walker provided the data for the study. I am John Krall. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Leadership Indianapolis's brand new study. In fact, we're actually getting a sneak peek at it. The results of the study, the findings, won't be formally released until about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and there's an event tonight that we need to talk about as well. My guests are Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker, whose firm Walker provided the data for the study. Well, as I said, there is an event this evening. When will people be able to find this report in its entirety? I know there's an embargo, and you've been kind enough to share some of the findings with us, and we are grateful for that. But at what point will people, if they really want to take a look, will they be able to find it, Linda?
So this will be on our website, leadershipindianapolis.com. And the full report, there's an executive summary, but the full report, which includes some narrative, expanded findings, et cetera, will be on our website by about 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay, so just 2 or 3 hours after we go off the air. You will not have to wait long on that. We also were going to say, before we went to the break, we talked about the things that this showed in common, and some of that is that people are devoted to their communities. They think they're cool places and all of that. What were the significant or meaningful differences in what we found out of looking at those two other cities? Steve?
Well, again, the sort of the different makeup of each city is rather interesting. Again, Austin is a newer city. It's more transient, less natives. Louisville actually has a higher percentage of native population than we do here in Indianapolis. When you just ask them about how willing they would be to contribute their time and effort and money in the community, we found the results were just about the same across the board. I think the bigger differences were not so much among the cities, but among those who are actually really involved in their community, those people that are civically engaged. And then also we saw some interesting differences demographically in terms of what motivates people to become civically engaged. And in particular, we found that millennials, this younger generation that is coming up, has a very different value set around community engagement than do baby boomers or the Generation X, which is the generation that's sort of in between the millennials and the baby boomers.
And in terms of that, Linda, was there anything that surprised you in looking at the study? To my mind, when we talk about Louisville, Indianapolis, and Austin, they actually sound like three very different cities because, obviously Louisville's a river city. Austin is in sort of the place where all of the power and the money in the country are drifting. It's all drifting south and west now. And Indianapolis is part, if we're going to talk in cliches, is part of a Rust Belt state that is part of that process of reinventing itself right now. So, to some degree, you make an argument that you were comparing apples to oranges to doorknobs. What in looking at it leapt out at you?
Interesting point to think about comparing apples to oranges, because pretty much every city, and not just in America, but internationally, across the globe, we are all looking at talent. Everybody is looking at talent. And we were at a national conference a few weeks ago, and we had this conversation that just kept coming back and back, that was, talent is the new oil. What cities can attract, retain, engage talent? And so I think perhaps demographically and the way that we think of maybe the two cities that we compared Indianapolis to, you might think that they're different, the vast, but what I would suggest to you is they're cities. And the cities are what's growing across the globe. And so we can look at those and we can always find differences, but we're all in the business of saying, how do we get this talent? How do we keep this talent? How do we grow this talent? How do we engage this talent? So for me, you asked what was perhaps surprising to me. I'm an Indianapolis native, grew up here, drink the Kool-Aid when I say Indianapolis rocks and we have something special here, and that makes me special, right? And so I think the thing that was surprising was to find that maybe we're not. And that's not to say that Indianapolis is no good or that we're slipping or anything like that. But I think, to Steve's point, other cities, other people love their cities, too. And, oh, by the way, Indianapolis has been this gem that we know other cities have studied for the past few decades. They come. They check us out. They want to know, how are you achieving these things? How are you getting all of these people to do this Super Bowl? And how are you doing these public-private partnerships? This is amazing. It's like we're magicians. And those of us who are here say, this is what we do, right? This is what we do. It's in our DNA. So I think the thing that surprised me was that at least in this study, with these two cities, with the question set that we asked, was there's really not a significant advantage nor a disadvantage, but we're kind of right in there with a lot of other folks.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. The Springboard is a new study of the state of community leadership by Leadership Indianapolis. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Margaret, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. I don't know if it was the cell connection or what, but anyhow, please.
Thank you.
Thank you for being patient and persistent.
Once again, thanks to your setting up a framework for public conversation that leads us to the big picture and perhaps working backwards so we can benefit the common good for all groups. And I'm excited about seeing the outcome of this new survey. What comes to mind is the survey that Eli Lilly had conducted by Polis and then released about 12 years ago. I believe it was 2003. And that issue was, why don't groups work together better? And one of the conclusions of that was Indianapolis and Central Indiana, and it focused on that. So didn't have or may still not have a great culture of collaboration. I'm curious to know if any of the 23 leaders that you interviewed spoke to, you know, you have a common goal, and then the diversity is bringing different perspectives, different needs to the table to talk about the bigger picture. And I think they're terrific public-private partnerships in Indianapolis. I was out of the state for 10 years, and I came back. I'm a fifth-generation Hoosier, born and grew up in Indianapolis, blah, 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 blah. My point is, I still don't see, let me put it this way, a terrific missed opportunity that the mayor could still take and meet is on the proposed Criminal Justice Center. He wanted to leave a legacy, and his style of going about that wasn't very inclusive. And instead of going, okay, I still have 8, 9, 10 months to go in my administration, I guess it's more like 6, but he still could step up to the plate and go, we got a whole lot of data included. We have a whole lot of new information now about trends, both nationally as well as Indianapolis. We have Troy Riggs, who's here for just 2 more weeks. We have all these community groups, including Recycle Force and IndyCan, who are bringing new data to the situation. Let's go at it, plan two. And Maggie Lewis has started bringing this about. But what I see is the absence of leadership that goes, okay, we got the community interest long term here. Let's work together. Again, we have lots of public-private partnerships on the level below the full community, but I don't see any on the full Indianapolis, Central Indiana. Perhaps it's coming.
Yeah, Margaret, let Linda
sure.
And Steve
so
respond.
Is,
to
this. Did any of the interviewees speak of that?
Okay, thank you very much for the call
you.
And the question, Margaret. Well, I think that the overarching theme there was, did we study this area of collaboration? Whether there is collaboration, within certain sectors like not-for-profits working with each other, and is there collaboration across the sectors? Obviously, public-private partnerships have had a long history here in Indianapolis, and that would suggest, or at least connote a certain level of collaboration, but Margaret and the study she referenced seemed to suggest that that's not always been the case. Lynn, I'm going to let you take a crack at that first, and then Steve, I want to hear your thoughts as well.
Sure, and I'll let Steve speak specifically to the study. We didn't look at that issue, but I'll let Steve provide some context around that. So I would suggest a couple of things. When I hear this notion of collaborative work, I think when we did talk to these high level community leaders, and then as we've just been talking with other folks and sharing the results of this study, I think that this is what's in this secret sauce that we talk about, that we didn't study. We didn't look at the intensity of civic engagement. We didn't look at all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But I think we can speculate that when we say, hey, we have something special here and our civic leaders are in the 90 percentiles with all of these key indicators about serving our community and that kind of thing, I would suggest that collaboration is a key in our civic leadership. We may not always see it in the political environment, but the political environment is only one piece of that mm-hmm. civic environment. But I would suggest that it is there. Otherwise, we would not be able to pull off the incredible asset development and achievements that we have been able to achieve.
Steve, your thoughts?
Yeah, just maybe said a little different way. Whenever you do something like this for the first time, when you get done, there's about 100 things you say, man, I wish we would ask that. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't get specifically at the collaboration issue, although it was mentioned frequently in the qualitative. And I would say that
negatively or positively?
Both.
Okay.
In some ways, collaboration. If you take collaboration to the extreme, you have one board or one group that does everything. And part of the beauty of innovation is having lots of people touch things. And I know some of my mentors in the community would say a lot of what happened in Indianapolis, it wasn't centrally planned.
Yeah.
It was a lot of smart people that just got these projects going, and then they sort of coalesced. And I think that's the exciting thing about this study is that we can put this out, we can have all the people that love this city and care about this city start to dialogue this, and maybe we can be a little more intentional and purposeful. I know the funders are always interested in collaboration. They don't want redundancy. And yet you know, part of innovation is given lots of people, and inclusion is given lots of people capacity. The last thing I'll say is that another key finding of the study is that we have a disconnect. We have people that would like to be involved and engaged, and sometimes we don't always have the opportunities to get them engaged in a way that's appropriate for their skill set or fits their time that they have to volunteer. So there's some sort of matchmaking that needs to go on. Obviously, we have issues in the community that need to be addressed, and the good news is that we have capacity for leaders who want to go ahead and tackle some of these issues.
Could you give me a concrete example, you know, a way so that people can visualize when you say that there are people who want to be engaged but we lack the opportunities? You know, what sort of things do they want to do that we don't have opportunities for them to do?
Well, I'll give you an example. You know, we can pull off a Super Bowl because we got this group of people that all want to go be a part of that. And yet we have many children in the inner city that could really use a reading tutor.
Okay.
Okay? So, you know, it is fun to go be a part of the Super Bowl, but perhaps it's just as important, if not more so, that we have people that are engaged in some of the other activities that are very important volunteer. You mentioned we were just with the mayor. The mayor's favorite thing to say is, if you want to help the community, go tutor a kid.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what a listener named Linda did and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Linda, welcome to the program. Linda, are you with us? We'll see if we can get Linda back. And I think Linda's question, if I understood the prompt right, was to see if there was a connection, a difference between millennials and baby boomers in terms of both their leadership and civic engagement expectation. Steve?
Yes, it is. The differences are rather stark. And in general, baby boomers are a little more motivated by the material and the recognition or the benefits that might accrue to them in their career or their professional life because of their volunteer activities.
That is a novel interpretation, that baby boomers might be just a little bit narcissistic.
Well, I can speak from
experience.
I was
going to say, I think we all fit that club, but that's okay.
Millennials actually have a much bigger value set around doing things for the people that it serves, for the benefit of the organization, a belief that the organization actually is acting in the best interest, and, you know, may not be as attracted to some of the traditional trappings of leadership, like being on a board or being recognized in the community for your leadership. They may want to just get their hands dirty and see some project to completion. So I think it is a value system that is going to be different. We're different than the generations that preceded us, and it's not surprising that this generation will be different because they've grown up in a different world.
Linda, we've got just a little bit of time before the break, but can you give us some thoughts about how, you know, given that there are different sets of expectations along generational lines, in terms of inculcating that next generation of leaders, how does that change your approach, or does it even?
It does change our approach. In fact, one of the things that we're doing as a direct result of this study is we are launching a boot camp, a civic boot camp specifically for millennials, professionals under the age of 35, to encourage them and prepare them for civic leadership. There's not a program like that in the city that we have found. And it does absolutely affect our approach, and we really want to take this to the community and have it help our community respond as well.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker of the firm Walker that provided data for a new study of the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're getting a sneak peek, actually, at a new study of the state of community leadership here in central Indiana that was pulled together by Leadership Indianapolis. My guests are Linda Kirby of Leadership Indianapolis and Steve Walker, whose firm Walker provided much of the data, well, all of the data, I guess, for this study. And we have been talking really about some changing patterns of leadership and civic engagement. Larry, welcome to the program.
How you doing, John?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
You know, I'm listening to your conversation, and I know these are young people, probably millennials you have in there. They've not said a word about the proliferation of state-sponsored and city-sponsored alcoholism. We have a situation here in our city and in our state where we're subsidizing alcoholism. You can't say it any other way when you got 337 booze joints downtown. I mean, what do they think? Do they think that when you go in the evening, every evening you're expected to drink a certain amount of alcohol, or the breweries that the state is sponsoring do not function right? Do they think that's economic development when you're promoting someone to go in and have where you go in and drink so much booze every night, or you have a governor that's saying, we're going to give you free needles to take your heroin. We're not going to have the National Guard. I'm not going to sign an executive order and bring the National Guard in to shut the distribution down, but I'm going to hand out free needles, and I'm going to promote booze and now even strong spirits that are being promoted. Do they think that that's a helpful thing to promote alcoholism and the use of heroin in our community?
Okay, let me see if I can get an answer for you real quickly. Thanks very much for the call, Larry. Well, are there state-sponsored approaches to delivery of services that aren't necessarily helpful to creating a level of both leadership and civic, I'm not going to say civic engagement, but civic responsibility here? And was that part of the study in any way?
No, not at all a part of the study. This was really to get some insight into the behaviors of civic leaders and the pathways to leadership. So this study would not reveal any information for that question.
And I don't think I'm giving anything away, but I probably should say, and it, to correct Larry's point, I think you both identified yourself as not being of the millennial generation earlier.
I'd like to think that I am.
However,
I'm nowhere near.
My driver's license says otherwise.
Or your birth certificate, one or the other. So, Linda, real quickly, you know, given that you have collected this data now, what do you do with it?
Oh, it's an excellent question. And it really is the purpose behind all of this. And I can't answer that question without noting that Walker contributed all of this research. This was a gift to Leadership Indianapolis and the community. We did not pay a penny for any of this. Walker celebrated its 75th anniversary last year in 2014. And this was Steve's response to say, let's see what we can do to help the community. And it was important to him and also to us to make sure that this is a tool that the entire community can use. It's probably important to help folks know it's not a set of answers. It doesn't line out. We need to do this, and then we need to do this, and then we need to do this. It's very informative, though, in saying in order for our community to thrive in a civic leadership capacity, it's pretty critical that we embrace the diversity that is here. And that we understand the elements of that diversity. We interpret diversity as being very broad, so you're going to hear us talk about that in terms of race and ethnicity, but gender, age, profession, all of those things, it's critical to our community. And so our hope is that while this is very informative to Leadership Indianapolis, helping us identify programmatic and event-oriented types of things that we can do to better build that pipeline of civic leadership, we hope the community, all of our organizations and initiatives, will also take it as information that can be helpful to them as they adapt to a new generation coming up. But also to figure out ways to do intergenerational work We don't toss one out just to bring the other one in, but we also know that we cannot attract tomorrow's civic leaders the same way that we have attracted today's and yesterday's civic leaders. And so there's a lot of information here that if our community can sort of wrap their arms around it, we can make some significant strides in more effectively engaging the people who are here.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Jonathan that is right on point. And if you'd like to reach out to us by Twitter, via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Jonathan says, interesting topic. Often it's the organization that creates obstacles rather than the millennials. Is there, and you're nodding your head, Steve, and nodding your head does not work well on radio. It's an auditory medium. So I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that.
Yeah, I think Jonathan hit it head on, you know, that this is going to be a different deal with millennials, and the smart organizations are going to adapt and find ways to include them, you know, in terms of how they reach out to them, what they have them do for their organization, how they recognize them, how they support the type of work they do. And I'm sure that this is not necessarily unique in generational studies, but this millennial group is different, and they want a different experience than the baby boomers. So the smart organizations are going to embrace that.
I think it's probably important, John, for folks to understand. I think one of the things that Steve and I have heard just a little bit is folks sometimes tend to think of millennials as being, you know, high school and college age, and it's pretty critical that we understand these folks are 35 and under.
Yeah, 1980.
They are in the workforce. They are already serving our communities. They are here. And I think one of the, to add to Steve's point, one of the things that I think is pretty critical for our community, our organizations, et cetera, to understand is there is value in embracing them now. They have value now. They're not kids, although I would submit that kids have value also. Mm-hmm. They have value. They have experience. They have a voice that is important for our community to hear.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of community leadership here in Indianapolis. The Springboard is a new study of community leadership in Indianapolis, sponsored by Leadership Indianapolis, the group. Dash, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to listen to you. My point is one that kind of stirs me up a bit, in that we keep emphasizing leadership. And the last thing that I want to see in a community is a bunch of leaders. We've got 435 of those presidents in waiting that all think they should be the head honcho. And yet, we don't have public servants anymore, people that roll up their sleeves, that get down and dirty, that look and see and evaluate the needs of a community and say, I'll go do that. I'll pick up the trash. I'll take out the garbage. I want to see somebody like that. And leadership, the idea is totally anathema to that of a democratic republic.
Thanks
totally for... contrary to what we expect of our public servants.
Thanks very much for the call. I'm going to give them a chance. I think if I could, Dash, I'm going to reframe your question just a little bit as what was the definition of leadership you were looking at? Because Dash is really talking about servant leadership here, a specific model.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the findings that we have in this study is that community leadership is ill-defined. We found, and Steve can speak to this because he did so many of these qualitative interviews, we found that can be interpreted in a variety of ways.
Yeah, and I think leadership really is, if you look at it, it's the ability to make positive change, make change happen. I think we hope and assume that it's positive change. But from our research, the definitions of leadership that we came out with, particularly as it relates to volunteer civic type of leadership, we did not really address public sector elected leadership, although I would grant you that is certainly a key area. Mm-hmm. And also a place where you'd hope that people who are community-minded would be attracted to. But in general, leadership gets defined as financial support, ability to connect people, different people. At some level, there is a title. There is some title that is generally associated with leadership. And probably the most compelling for this research is the qualities that allow people with different agendas to work together towards a common goal. So if I had to sum it up, that I think the best attributes of leadership are people who say what they believe in, who actually do what they say, and that they can bring others along in the course of something that is transformative in a positive and productive way.
I'm going to try to click through these pretty quickly because we are starting to get questions and calls backing up. We've got a Facebook question from a listener named Taylor. If you'd like to reach out to us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Taylor says, my problem is that people who need to make some money off of civic things can't because of volunteerism. Do you think there should be a way to pay at least something besides tickets or parking to bring folks in? Is there, put another way, is there an economic disqualifier for a lot of people who otherwise might be civically engaged but just can't afford to?
It's an excellent question. And in fact, it's one of the things that we think this study will help us do, which is to help our community see and begin to value those many perspectives that exist. I think some of us probably think of civic leaders as being a corporate executive of a certain profile. But one of the things that this study reveals to us and that we know in our work is leadership happens at many different levels. It happens in the grassroots area of a neighborhood, a street, a block, all the way up to the kinds of civic leaders who are moving the needle on big community initiatives. And we hope to say, let's embrace all of those. Everyone is critical, and let's bring more folks together to accomplish that work.
Steve, did the research, the data that you assembled and studied indicate that there are economic brake lines where people just can't afford to be civically engaged, much as they might want to?
Yeah, we did ask one specific question, and I don't recall it exactly, but we asked, are you currently or would you be willing to donate your time and efforts to something in the community? And I want to say it's about two-thirds mm-hmm. of our general population replied. And then obviously this leadership group was up in the high 90s. So I do think there is a big capacity out there, but I think this is exactly the point, is that we've got to come up with different ways to engage people that want to help out. Maybe it's the time that they can, the time of the day or the week that they mm-hmm. can participate. Maybe it's doing things that aren't just related to raising money. And I think that's going to be really key for those organizations that are really going to thrive, or they're going to be the ones that are going to figure this out.
I'm going to try to get a couple more calls in. I'm going to ask our listeners who are reaching out to us by phone here to be very brief in their questions. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hello, John. Thanks for taking my call again. I didn't hear mention that whether the study looked at, and I imagine it did, the rate of crime in, say, Austin or as opposed to or compared to Indianapolis. Obviously, in order to get a tourist trade, you want a big police presence downtown. And as a comment, years ago, while stationed in the service down in New Mexico, an older fellow made the comment when he found out I was from Indianapolis that he remembered a beautiful river flowing through Indianapolis. Now, I don't know how many years ago that had to be, but I've always thought, I grew up in Indianapolis, I've always thought, even as a child, that I had never understood why Indianapolis didn't develop more along the river, and whether it's upper-end restaurants or, sorry to the caller named Larry, but nightclubs, I've just never understood that we didn't have more commercial development along White River. I mean, they could even go to the extent of forming an artificial waterfall for ambiance or whatever. Thanks for taking my call, John.
Certainly. Thanks very much for calling, Ron.
Sure.
So did you drill down to specific opportunities for, creating, enhancing the community through leadership. That's, you know, to some, looking for those missed opportunities, White River, whatever. And I should say Ron's not alone. I think Tim Swearens, who's the editorial page editor for The Star, made pretty much the same point in a column recently, too.
Yeah, and CICF with Brian Payne has an initiative going on to beautify the waterways. And, you know, I know the zoo and, and White River State Park has helped that over there. So I think that is a good long-term goal.
But no, we actually, this was specific to community leadership, this study. We did not drill down into any specific civic issue. But I would say the Reconnecting to Our Waterways initiative that a number of civic leaders are engaged in working on is a perfect example of this tremendous legacy of civic leadership that Indianapolis enjoys.
I'm going to try to sneak one more caller in, and I'm going to ask Connie. Welcome to the program. I'm going to ask you to get to your question very quickly.
Yes. A quick comment. I was surprised that they picked Austin and Louisville as comparison cities. I've always heard that Austin, with its university there, is a place that graduates often stay. I lived in Lexington for a while, was in Louisville. The river in Louisville makes a great difference, and Indianapolis is shaped by this flat land where people can move north, south, east, west. But my real question about leadership, older people versus millennials, I am in the hardcore inner city. I've seen some churches, you know, begin to decline, close, a new congregation comes in. They're supported by a big church that's out in the suburban area. And good things are being done, but it's very difficult. If you go to the neighborhood association and someone comes in to ask for a variance, it's very difficult to get the proprietary information as to how this is, who's really behind this and where the... You know, they're doing good.
Connie, we're running out of time.
Okay.
I'm going
to... is there a difference in millennials? The millennials seem not to be worried. If it gets, they don't care. You know, they're not asking questions. It's like the details aren't as important to them.
Connie, I'm going to have to give them a chance. Real quickly. We have established, though, that the millennials are just looking at different models of engagement. I think probably I'm going to ask one last question before I have to let you go. Is this study going to be a standalone, or are you going to come back and do things like this again in the future? If so, we'd love to have you back.
Okay. Excellent. We hope to use it as a springboard. We haven't gotten that far, to tell you the truth, about is there something else behind it. It was a significant contribution for Walker, so stay tuned.
Okay. My guests have been Linda Kirby and Steve Walker, and they've been talking about the state of community leadership here in Indiana. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.